Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
This being Masters Week, on this episode of the Pro Sports Podcasters, we're going to do everything golf. It begins with an interview with Hannah Bowen, PGA professional from Wales, and we follow with a discussion between Justin and I talking about future events this year in the world of golf, including the Olympics and the Ryder Cup. Enjoy the show. So today we've got with us co-host of the show, Nee Wallace Bruce.
Hello, hello, hello.
And we are joined by PGA professional, course professional, model, all-around ambassador for the sport. Her name's a palindrome. She's got a metronomic swing, and she's basically just a pretty cool chick, Hannah Bowen. Nice to have you on the show, Hannah.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm really excited. And that description I'm now going to take and use for all of my sort of interviews or anything I have to do when I have to do a bio. Thank you very much. I'm impressed with that.
Yeah, you'll have to add that to your Instagram bio. Now, Hannah, how has the 2021 year started off for you in terms of golf and playing and whatnot?
It's been a tough one. I don't know how much you know about the lockdown in the UK, but we have had a long lockdown. So just before Christmas, we've only now started to open up, which is fantastic. But it has meant that there's been a bit of a delay on our sort of tournament schedule, and in terms of sort of practice, I feel most underprepared I've been in a long time, but we'll see how it goes. I'm hoping that 2021 will be the best of years once we get going and we get cracking again.
Nice.
Now, as far as the lockdown goes, what do you have at your own flat to actually practice with?
Can I be perfectly honest? I'm probably one of the worst professionals ever because I've got absolutely nothing. Everyone always asks me this. So they always say, oh, you know, what are you doing indoor practice? I kind of really enjoyed the break. That sounds awful, but most of my indoor practice meant walking back and forth to the fridge and watching Netflix, which was actually one of the best sort of couple of weeks I've had, I'll be honest.
Yeah, when I think about golf in Britain, I guess Scotland's the first one that comes to mind because you think of places like St. Andrews and Carnoustie.
Not Wales?
Well, I was hoping you could tell us about the Welsh scene. What's golf like in Wales, if you don't mind?
Well, we actually had the 2010 Ryder Cup in Wales. That was probably one of the tournaments that we kind of just tell everyone about when you're living in Wales. We do have the Royal Plus Call. We tend to hold our sort of senior championships, senior opens there. We are going to be holding the Ladies Open at Royal Plus Call, which is, again, a prestigious course. So looking forward to that in a couple of years to come. What I will say about Welsh golf, if anyone ever comes over to Wales, we have the friendliest people, we have the best grub. It is that kind of atmosphere if you come and play around in Wales. So it's different to, how we put this, your St. Andrews feel, where it's very prestigious. We do know how to sort of churn things around, be a bit more modern, and invite and be inclusive to everyone who comes and plays golf here.
Nice. And one of the best Welsh golf ambassadors at the moment, you could say, is Gareth Bale, maybe.
I would say that. Actually, I did an event. We do this thing called the Celebrity Cup. Really good event. Raises money for a variety of charities. The charity gets chosen by a celebrity each year. And he's actually been at the event about three times. And to be fair, he is a very nice guy, very competitive. He's honestly great. He's great for the game. I think all these kind of influencers, celebrities who take up golf, fantastic, great for the game. They do their job in terms of making golf look cool. And then ourselves, volunteers, clubs and club pros, we do our bit by sort of running your new to golf schemes and beginner sessions to get more sort of females, girls, disability golf, all that kind of schemes to get more people into golf.
Yeah, so you mentioned he does his part to make golf look cool. I'd say you do your part as well. You've got a very distinctive look. I know your hair is kind of like your calling card. So what got you into golf to begin with?
I'm a joiner. So what you'll know about me, I wasn't naturally talented. I wasn't sort of naturally gifted at any form of sport. But I like to join clubs. So I started out, I'd joined sort of road safety, crime prevention. I did a book club. I did sewing at one stage. So when the opportunity to play golf sort of rose, I took it up. And the best thing with golf is that it is self-paced, is self-learned, and you can play at any ability, and any ability can play with any person, which kind of helped me with this game, because it didn't mean I had to be naturally gifted. It depended on what I put into it, what I got out of it, which then sounds really bad when I say I haven't done any indoor practice. But it is. It's that kind of sport. Anyone can play, and that's what I sort of love about it and continue to love about it.
So what's being done in Wales to grow the sport itself? Like over here we have, I don't know if you know about it, but I think you may have heard of it actually, is the Drive, Chip and Putt initiative, which is to get young kids into the sport in a simple skills competition that culminates at a national championship at Augusta, actually.
Wow. Where can I sign up?
You're past eligibility, unfortunately.
Well, hey, you haven't seen me play this last, when we get out of lockdown now. it might be at the right level. Though we run a lot of different schemes. We don't speak of them maybe as much as we should, because there's a lot going on. Our golf union in Wales are fantastic. I'm actually an ambassador with them to help encourage golf. What they do is we run 6-week programs, which are called New to Golf Schemes. They could be run for adult males, females, disability golf, family and group coaching. And they're all funded by themselves, so that a player can get 6 weeks of free coaching with, and a taster of golf with a PGA professional, which is really cool. So we run that throughout the year, and you can run as many schemes as you like, and they've continued through COVID, which has been also fantastic. In terms of clinics, we run a lot of coaching clinics. Again, all the things we do in Wales are free. So we offer a lot of free coaching, cheap memberships, just to sort of encourage golfers. Basically, the cheaper it is, the more likely you are to get somebody sort of taking it up, having a go, hitting the ball. So our schemes are more run on trying to make it for anybody. It doesn't matter what kind of money you have or what kind of background you've come from. That's the kind of schemes we sort of run. I'm lucky. I don't know how much is done in terms of sort of England. I do talk to some of the girls, and I think, heck, I'm lucky to be in Wales and do all the schemes that we sort of have in place. It's very good.
Now, I know for a fact that last year during the COVID lockdown and then subsequent opening during the summer, that golf had its greatest increase in Canada in many, many years. The largest number of new players had got involved, because it was one of the few things you could actually do here in the summer that wasn't really regulated due to the lockdown. Did they have growth in Wales the same way?
We did. We definitely had a growth. I myself managed to get 50 female members join at a local club that I've been working with. So it's been incredible. I think more importantly, it's how we retain these sort of newbies who come in to join, just by being welcoming, just by giving them cheaper options, offering them lessons, schemes, social activities. I think that's what's going to be really important in this next sort of year. Yes, we've had lots of people take up golf, but how are we going to retain them in this sport? How are we going to get them to continue and to be full lifelong golfers?
Now, just circling back to growing the game, being in Wales, I guess one thing I think about is the Commonwealth Games, because that's when Wales can go off against England, they can go off against Scotland and the other parts of the Commonwealth. Would you like to see golf in the Commonwealth Games in the future?
I think so. To be honest, golf just recently has been in the Olympics as well. So there's a lot of things to sort of think about in terms of how it would work. But I don't see why not. Why not? Let's get it in there.
Yeah, why not?
Now, you yourself are an aspiring tour professional, of course. What paths do you have to get on to, say, the European tour? Because it's entirely different than what happens over here on this side of the pond, basically.
So there's two different ways you can get a Ladies European Tour card. So one of the ways is by going through tour school. Tour school is very, very hard. It's sort of grueling a couple of weeks. It's expensive, but that is sort of one way. I won't go into too many details.
Okay.
If anyone really wants to know, they can DM me and I'll give them an insight, but we could be here all day with that. And there's another way which you can go through, which is LET Access, which is a developmental tour below the Ladies European Tour. So when you play that, depending on how you do throughout the year, what events you've got in, how many you've played, your rankings, you can get a card through that or an invite to the final stages of tour school, which sort of held at the end of the year.
And how long did it take you to go through the PGA professional process?
That was a 3-year process. So I don't look back. It was hard. I'll be honest with anyone. It was difficult. Each year it changes into what you've got to sort of do and what requirements you have. But it's worth it. In the end, I'd say to anyone, it's worth doing the PGA. If you want a job in golf, I think the best thing that it's offered me is like a stepping stone in terms of being able to play and work in the industry, which I might not have been able to have had I gone to a route or gone through university in terms of studying history or something like that. It's quite nice to not only play in the golf world, but also work in the golf industry. So my life's all golf.
Yeah, now obviously you love playing golf, but is there a sport you prefer to watch?
In terms of other sports, I love rugby. We're big fans of rugby in Wales.
Yeah.
So rugby is one of the ones I like to watch. Plus, when we didn't have COVID, whenever the rugby was on, the Six Nations, it was always a great time to sort of go out, have a couple of beers and sort of celebrate with friends. So there's some good camaraderie in watching the rugby.
Congratulations to Wales on winning the Six Nations, by the way. I should put that in there.
Yeah, I was sneakily sort of prompting you there with the I love rugby. Wales is great.
that was a very nice cut-out pass, and I picked that up.
Thank you very much.
Not so subtle.
No, I know.
Do you have a favorite course that you've played on?
Oh, well, that is a list of courses I've played well at. I'll be honest, I'm biased. I'm all for, if I've played well, it's going to be the course I like. No, there's plenty of really good courses in my area in terms of competition, sort of events and courses. One course that springs to mind that kind of blew me away. So I played in the Shire last year in the Justin Rules series. I don't know how much you know about that, but it's a series made by Justin to help those from the UK who were struggling to get out and play because of COVID. And we played the Shire. And one thing I will say, I played it a week prior to the event for my practice round because I was working in between. And the difference in the course from a week previous to the tournament was incredible. The green staff should get a round of applause. Wow, it was incredible. And everyone was saying the greens, for example, they were equivalent to Augusta standard. So it was great to see the difference. But do you know what makes a really good course for me? A course that have got really good members who are welcoming, who you can chat with anybody. And courses that, like again, I love my food. So if they've got good, cheap food, then I'm all ears. I think that's what makes a really good course. So I've played a lot of courses like that. The more modern, the more friendly, the better for me.
Nice. And what's your favourite dish when you're at the club?
Now you're talking. There's a lot of different dishes, to be honest. Do you know what? Whenever I go away to sort of like Spain, I always have paella. I absolutely love paella. But you can't have paella without sangria. So that is a bit of a no-go when you're playing tournaments. I can't help myself.
I like it.
Yeah, there's a misconception because you're talking about how you're trying to get, you know, younger people into the game and to stick with it and, you know, learn at their own pace. And there's a misconception that golf is extremely cost prohibitive. And I believe that's sort of old school thinking. In my opinion, it's become far more accessible to more people. And that's because, one, you don't necessarily need a coach anymore. You can get a lot of instruction free pretty much online. Have you taken advantage of any sort of the online tips or tricks are available?
We're going to have a disagreement here. Oh, I can feel it coming. This is the PGA coach in me that's going to say these words. I apologize if I upset anyone. Basically, I think online tips are lovely, but I don't think they're as helpful or structured as going to see an actual coach. It's the same as if you will go into the doctors, but you've got a prescription done by the receptionist. You still want to see the doctor. You still want to get his or her advice on what is your actual problem. So I do think that online tips are great, but they're not specific to each individual. I think the best way to improve is to go and see a coach. And I will be honest, I know a lot of coaches that are cutting down their fees and doing schemes and running events and coaching sessions, which are cheap, or some of them are free, like the ones I've mentioned below. So I wouldn't necessarily say stay away from sort of coaches. And I'd say a lot of the online advice can sometimes be taken into too many different ways, if that makes sense. A lot of it's not specific for each person, so it's very generic. So to be wise when you're taking that kind of YouTube advice, or even just tips from your friends who, you know, play a little bit better than you and like to say, keep your head down, yeah, or move your body this way. It's great, but it's not specific to the individual and isn't necessarily going to help as much as going to see a coach of some.
Do you think a beginner should get fit for clubs, or is that something that should come along later once the swing is somewhat developed?
That is a complicated one, because I think it should come later, purely because the player hasn't got from a rhythm, or I suppose they're learning their skill when they start off. I will say there's some things that I think a beginner needs to look at though when they're going in terms of sets. So you don't want a lady female beginner playing with stiff steel shafts. So there's certain things that they can look at. I would like to think that your pro can help you when you're trying to pick a set, or even just buy a secondhand one on Facebook or eBay or something like that. So there's little things that need to, you know, you need a set which is going to be the right length and is going to be the right sort of shaft so that you can swing it and it's not too heavy. And but I do think that it comes, having sort of fit-ins should come once you sort of, one, know that you were invested in the sport, because I do know that they can be expensive, and two, when you've got more like a technique and you know that you'll probably have that technique for a long time, so those clubs then can be kept for a long time.
Do you currently have a club sponsor?
No, I'll be honest with you, I've had this set for a fair few years now. Clubs are expensive.
For how long, sorry?
I've had them for about 4 years now. So that's quite a long time in terms of like pro clubs, if that makes sense. But yeah, they do the job. I have had fit-ins in between where I could get clubs which more suited to myself. But I do understand, like, I'm in the same predicament. It's all money. So kind of go what you can afford for the time being. And for me, the advantages on the new set weren't, they were there, but they weren't so clear cut that I could invest $2,000 in a sort of a new set as much as I want to. If anybody wants to give me a $2,000 set, rock on. I'm happy to go away with that. But yeah, it just wasn't quite in my price point. But
yeah, so TaylorMade Callaway. if you're listening.
I'll take anything. Do you know what? I'll take anything. Dunlop, Wilson, if you want to give me clubs, I'm happy to take some clubs.
Even at the top level, I mean, the prize pools are completely disproportionate to the men. So even the LPGA professionals will find themselves in situations where they have to do things outside of just golf in order to make a comfortable living. And I think one of the best examples of that just happened recently. Yulimi No got fined $10,000 for slow play at the Kia Classic.
No.
And she finished 61st, and her prize pool was $4,600.
No.
Right? So she lost $5,400 in that tournament by getting penalized for slow play. And she admits that maybe she played a little slower because she was a new caddy. But I mean, there are...
That's shocking. But that's...
There are multiple warnings on the PGA Tour that happen constantly, and guys aren't getting fined. And even when they do...
They can afford it. Yeah.
Correct. So I can imagine you on a second tier level having to pay out for everything.
Yeah.
To try and win just a little bit back. And really, you're not trying to win money. What you're trying to do is just move yourself up, right? That's it.
Do you know, the best thing is, and we say this every time, so I have a really close friend who we're both doing the same thing, and we always say, the money that we spend towards a tournament, wherever it is, $2,000-$3,000, we know that we are spending that. We never go into that tournament thinking we're going to get that back. In our heads, that's $2,000-$3,000 that we are just throwing. That is it. It's gone. Whether we get something back, we get something back. But we know, no, that's it. That we know where we're going through that. We have to be comfortable with the idea that when we spend that money, it's not coming back to us. And that's kind of how we sort of live with the playing and the different tours in which we enter. Actually, a funny story now that you said that. I'm so lucky I didn't get fined. But £2,000 is a lot of money for me. And I didn't know because I hadn't played events last year. So I played, I got an invite to the last event. I thought, you know what, I'd better LET Access something their event. I said, sure, I'm going to go to it because I haven't been away any other time this year. And I'd sorted it out in my schedule that I could isolate there and isolate when I came back. I didn't have to miss any time in terms of work. And I went to the event and I couldn't drive abroad because I was too young. I didn't read the finer lines, if that made sense. So I read it slightly different to the way it was interpreted. It's not my fault, just saying. Anyone could have interpreted it my way, but the finer details, the way everyone else had read it, was that you can't have a taxi or like an Uber while you were there.
Oh.
And I panicked because they were going to fine me £2,000 for taking a taxi or Uber.
Seriously?
But like, yeah, and I, wow. Yeah, I could have, and I didn't know this. And you imagine, I hadn't played all year. I was almost in tears. I would not believe. And £2,000 is a lot of money. I was thinking, now, not only will I pay him for this trip, but I have to add another £2,000 onto it. I didn't get fined in the end. The lady who I chatted to, who was in charge of the LET event, she was lovely, and I explained, obviously, I can't drive abroad. Yeah, she was fine, so I didn't get fined in the end. But again, this is, you know, are these fines necessary? Is this disciplinary necessary? Sometimes I have to think and go back and be like, thinking, heck, this is a money-making scheme. These golf tours are constant money.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. Yeah, that's concerning. Yeah, that's almost discouraging. I mean, imagine if they had put the fine on you. That would be crippling.
Yeah, it could be crippling, and it could have detrimental effects to sort of girls moving up the ranks or wanting to play professional golf. Something that always shocks me and upsets me a little bit is the lack of support that we get from brands. Mm. Me mentioning that, yeah, I don't have a sponsor yet. Brands always tell us that they don't have the money to pay out to help us, and they don't
bullshit.
Have the budget.
Bullshit.
Right?
Exactly. Right? And they say they don't have the budget. That is exactly how I feel. Yet you see some. I'm not going to go into it too much, but at the moment, there's been a couple of brands who have sponsored beginner golfers,
mm-hmm.
and yet these are the brands that have said that they don't have the budget to support the elite. I'm not even talking about myself. I'm talking about girls who are high up on sort of the LET ranks. A lot of them are going to have sponsors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's obviously a tough year ahead, but hopefully things will get better. I should point out that our guests on the show in the past, they have seen success when they've come on. We've had two of our guests score their first ever goals in their respective sports.
One win a championship.
One won a championship last week. So... You might as well use the time on this show to speak it into existence. What are you looking to do this year?
I was going to say that. Now I'm going to say it all. I am looking to play, but it's very complicated with traveling abroad at the moment. So I will only look into that closer to sort of the dates and the times. But I'm going to enter WPGA events as usual, and I'm going to hopefully play Justin Rose Series if that goes ahead this year, and some Clutch Tour events, which are all sort of UK-based tour events to keep my hand in. I've got lots planned in terms of girls golf clinics and inclusive coaching clinics that I want to run this year, so I'm busy with that. And I've got a side job. I do that bit of modernist. I got a few bits, you know, going with that. And I've started working with a charity, so we're hoping to run a lot of events to make money and push mental health and well-being in sort of schools. So I work with a charity called Blood and Rum, which have been fantastic, and we're hoping to do more. Another thing I'm applying for, which again could make me seem crazy, but I thought, what the heck? So I'm applying for Miss Wales, which is another way and a platform to use to work in terms of showing that sport and golf, for example, can be played by females and should be played by females, and another platform to help with in terms of the charity I'm working with. I've also applied for a couple of dating shows, I'll be honest with you. Ever since the COVID hit, it's been very dry in the dating scene. So I'm applying for a couple of dating programs here in the UK. Who knows, might get one of them. To be honest, for me, this is kind of like a Mickey Mouse year, seeing how it goes. It's been very complicated with COVID, but more than anything, it's made me just kind of go, if I want to try something or do something, why not?
And I look forward to seeing you win Miss Wales.
Oh, I'd love to win Miss Wales. Well, I've got to get through to Miss Neith Talbot first, but you know, we'll see how that goes. Get to wear a fancy dress, nothing better. I am hoping to do tour school next year. So the whole plan is this year I'm making the most of sort of making a bit of money, getting some funds together so I can really enjoy being out doing tour school, playing in LET Access events and that. Next year when travel is eased and there's no risk of catching a deadly virus.
And where can our fans find you on your social medias?
I am on Twitter and I'm on Instagram. Both of these are my name. My caption is HannahGolf96. I regret that now. But at the time, it made lots of sense. But HannahGolf96 is my name. And hopefully I'll get to see you on my sort of account. If anyone wants to know anything more, please feel free to send me sort of like a DM or an email. And I'll try and get back to them in terms of their questions.
Perfect.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Hannah. And we will look forward to seeing your progress as the year goes on. We know that it's going to get better for you, and it's just a matter of that manifesting. So,
I've just come on the program, so of course it's going to get better for me. You've had wins. It's
it's the Pro Sports Podcasters effect, the PSP effect.
I feel like I'm not going to enter a tournament, and I know it's going to be the one that I want to win, and then I'll tell you because it will happen. I'll have to keep all the luck for that one tournament.
That's right.
No, we appreciate your time and. Again, we think you're doing a great work out there in Wales, getting lots of people involved in the game of golf. So we love to see it.
Yeah, you're an amazing ambassador for the sport. Really appreciate you coming on too.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed. You guys are great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at pro.sports.podcasters for the most current sports news. Now back to the show.
One thing that I love about an Olympic year is mm-hmm. because you'll have a number of tournaments that happen between now and June
right.
that are normally kind of ignored.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of tournaments in there that a lot of the players are like, I'm not going to go to that tournament. That's a little ways out. Or it's not that big a deal. It doesn't get a lot of coverage. So they just they ditch it. They don't bother. You only get like the desperate PGA players who are looking to earn points to remain on the PGA
mm-hmm.
that are going to those tournaments. Same thing in Europe. I'm sure it's the same thing. You're going to have top players who are going to look at the qualifications and be like, shit, if I can get myself, 400 FedEx Cup points, then I can move ahead of so-and-so and actually make the Olympics.
Right.
So they're going to end up showing up at these tournaments. You're going to have way better fields at some of these tournaments than you usually have.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I really like about it. And on top of that, this year is also a Ryder Cup year, which is a big factor too.
And what does that mean for the average fan?
One of the things I love about the Ryder Cup is it uses multiple formats. It's not just stroke play.
Interesting.
Right? So it has all the cool formats in golf that I personally like a lot more than just standard stroke play. So there are guys that will get selected because they're match play masters.
Mm-hmm.
Like a good example is this year, we just had the WGC Dell Technologies match play. It's like the only match play event on the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's just passed. And the defending champion was Kevin Kisner, who's a good golfer, but not fantastic. Mm-hmm. But he was defending champion and he went to like the quarterfinals or whatever again this year. It had Kuchar, who was in the final of the year previous. And I think 2 years previous to that, he was in the final. He's a good golfer again, not a fantastic one, but at match play, he's always there. Mm-hmm. Had Ian Poulter come out of his group and contend. Ian Poulter is getting on in years. He's, again, not considered the greatest player, but at match play, his record is phenomenal. So there are like match play specialists who don't rank as high in the world ranking, but in a tournament like the Ryder Cup, where that's a factor, it becomes a big deal to have them on your team. So that's another thing I like about this particular year, because you'll see these guys try and show out at tournaments to try and get the attention of the captain of the Ryder Cup.
I see. This is... And are there vice captains too, like assistants or...?
There's usually one other sort of assistant captain. So a captain's picked and he sort of picks an assistant captain. And then together, they will make decisions during the tournament, but it's up to the primary captain to pick who the extra guys are going to be.
Interesting. So I'm just looking at the stats of the Ryder Cup. So it used to be United States versus Great Britain.
Yeah.
And then United States versus Great Britain and Ireland. That happened from 73 to 77. And then now it's United States versus Europe. Interesting.
So yeah, Ryder Cup's all of Europe. So I think it's because the States got so dominant. Well, seriously, it became so dominant as far as the development of golf went that they decided to expand it. It's every other year that they have the Ryder Cup, and then the in-between years is the President's Cup, which is United States versus the rest of the world.
Oh, my Lord.
And that's not even a tournament, really. The last time they had it, it was commendable that the rest of the world team, they made a bit of a game of it, but they still got their asses handed to them in the end. The rest of the world isn't that big into golf when it comes right down to it.
So I'm just looking at this right now, just because I never heard of, I've heard of them, but I didn't really know what the difference was, nor did I really care too much until you came into my life, Cobe. but it's saying that apparently the President's Cup has every nation except for European. So all of the Europeans don't qualify for it for whatever reason. Because I guess they have the Ryder Cup.
Because they have the Ryder Cup, exactly. Right? So in the President's Cup, I mean, the big nations really in the President's Cup outside of the American team is you have like the Aussies. They always have a couple of decent players in the President's Cup. South Africans usually have a couple of decent players. You might get the odd player from, say, Japan or Korea. Yeah. And then you'll get like usually a Mexican player, a couple of Canadian players. Mm-hmm. These are kind of like the outside nations outside of Europe that generally have at least a few competitive players in them.
Right.
But when you look at the rosters, like every time the President's Cup comes around, I almost chuckle to myself and laugh. It's great for the guys who make the team because it's another way to kind of showcase themselves.
Right.
People will watch them. You don't really watch golf, but you watch let's say we're watching the Masters, which is coming up, you know, in a week. Mm-hmm. So you got the Masters coming up and you're watching on, you know, NBC Golf or whatever. 90% of the content is going to be American players and then the guys who are just the top five on the leaderboard.
Right.
If there happens to be some that aren't American, bonus. But for the most part, you're going to see a shit ton of American players. I watched one event that had Adam Hadwin. The event that he broke 60, which is ridiculous. Okay, you break 60 in a round. It's one of the special things you can do in golf, part of the under 60 club. But until it got to the point where it looked like he might break 60, you didn't see him.
Right.
Then it's like, oh shit, this guy might break 60. Let's get some cameras on him. There are rounds where players have done amazing things. And then I look at the entire broadcast and I saw one shot of that person. They had a phenomenal round and you got to see one shot because the cameras aren't following them.
Of course.
There's only X number of cameras you have on the course. If you're not American, your name better be like Rory McIlroy or John Rahm or something. Like, you better be a superstar. Otherwise, the cameras aren't really going to follow you. So with the President's Cup, it's a bonus for these guys because they're always against an American.
Okay.
So you get to see a lot of them, right? A lot of the players that were on the last President's Cup, people didn't know who they were. And then the next year, suddenly they started getting noticed because some of those guys beat some of the Americans in the President's Cup. Mm-hmm. So suddenly golf knows of them. Until then, golf didn't know who they were.
Oh.
Because they just weren't given the time of day as far as the broadcast goes.
Yeah.
That's the good thing about the President's Cup. But literally, I mean, the rest of the world team goes in knowing they're going to freaking lose. They know.
So they go in there for a little bit of fun, a little bit of see what I can do, maybe show up somebody if I can kind of deal.
Yeah. The last tournament at the time of the President's Cup, I think it's 12 players. I'd have to look at it again. But if it's 12 players, I think 8 or 9 of them were in the top 10 on the American side. There was one player on the President's Cup side that was in the top 10 in the world, and it was Hideki Matsuyama, I believe. And he was the only top 10 player that they had. The thing was, the President's Cup team actually put up a pretty good battle, better than they had ever done before. So, you know, kudos to them. They still lose in the end, but it's not about that. It's about showcasing your talent. Like, everybody wants to make the team because then people are going to know who you are. Mm-hmm. Then you can try and sell yourself to sponsors and such, right? You talk to sponsors and say, hey, I made the President's Cup. In 2 years, I'm probably going to be on it again. You're going to see a lot of me. You're going to want to have me sponsored when I'm back on.
Right.
So that's the advantage. But the Ryder Cup's a big deal because it's so close to even. All right. I think the Europeans lead by maybe 2 wins now, I think. What is it? Europe versus U.S. since they became the European nation together.
So the U.S. is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 wins to Europe's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11. So 11 to 8 with one tie.
Okay. It's a big deal. It's a true rivalry between the two. And the other cool thing about the Ryder Cup is every other Ryder Cup happens in either Europe or the States.
Correct.
Okay. And the host nation sets up the course. They pick the course and they set it up.
That's crazy.
Right. So for the last Ryder Cup, it was held in Europe. I believe in France was the last one.
Correct.
And because the Americans are stacked with bombers, guys that just hit it a mile, they specifically chose a course that was tight. You couldn't take advantage of real long shots from the tee. It was dangerous to try and go big from the tee. They let the rough grow to insane lengths. So if you did miss the fairway, you were in some significant trouble. They set it up entirely to benefit their guys. And they won. Now, this next Ryder Cup, is it at Winged Foot?
Wisconsin Whistling Straits.
Oh, Whistling Straits. Okay. So again, this is a total bombers course. Mm-hmm. So this is the Americans saying, okay, we're going to set ourselves up on like the best possible course for our guys. Right? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win, but it's a way to get a little bit of an advantage. So I don't know. I love the Ryder Cup. I love it. It's golf that the average person could watch, provided they, you know, had somebody with them that knew a little bit about the sport.
Yeah. I mean, I'm starting to get more invested in this now that I know there's a like similar competitions within competitions. It was like soccer when I first got introduced to it. I was like, how many tournaments are there? And people were like, oh, well, there's Europa, there's champions, and there's tournaments inside of domestic. And I feel like that's kind of the same with golf. It's just there's almost like the World Cup, essentially, every 2 years, or European Cup, or the... Yeah, you know what I mean? But this is interesting.
It's the different style of play that they incorporate during Ryder Cup that makes it exciting to me. Like, I love match play. Mm-hmm. And then I love the derivatives of group match play as well.
Right.
Things like that, I just find it more interesting than straight up stroke play. Okay. And part of the reason being is as somebody who plays golf, and I'm not the greatest at it, right? I'm still learning the game. But I've played guys who are significantly better than me at match play and beaten them.
Okay.
Because the difference between stroke play and match play is, so stroke play, every single shot counts. Mm-hmm. Every shot makes a difference. So if you're not that great and you hit a terrible shot and put yourself in the middle of nowhere, who knows how many more shots it's going to take before you get back to somewhere where you can set yourself up to sink this putt and get on to the next hole. So let's say the average hole, a par four, it's a par four, and you hit an absolutely terrible shot off the tee, but you're not, you know, out of bounds, say, but you're in some wooded area, you're screwed up. It takes you a shot to get out of the woods. It takes you then another shot to get yourself back into position. So you're three shots in. And then it's your fourth shot, and you're aiming at the green, but if you don't hit a perfect shot, you end up short of the green. That's four. You chip up, that's five. Let's say it takes you a couple of putts to chip down, that's seven. So you're three over for that one hole. Triple bogey is devastating on the PGA Tour, but it happens. It can happen, especially to guys that are basically trying to play beyond their ability against guys who are phenomenal.
Right.
So you can end up in a bad situation and you end up getting a triple bogey. Actually, I think the worst ever score on a single hole in the PGA Tour is Kevin Na's 16. He scored a 16 strokes on one hole.
Because then John Daly had 18 as well.
Okay, so Daly's had worse.
Yeah, and it shows Daly, actually. I should send you this link. It just shows his full scale, like all of his hits for that one hole. And it looks horrible.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was Kevin Na. No, 18 would be the highest, I think, in the modern era.
But do you want to hear overall in history?
Oh, it's something probably ridiculous. But then again, they had completely different equipment, right? And it was a far more difficult game. The courses weren't too manicured, right? But yeah, so I mean, one hole like that, it doesn't have to be that ridiculous. But I mean, if you even got a quadruple bogey, four over, you shot an eight on a par four, that probably takes you completely out of the tournament. You're probably done.
Right.
But in match play, each hole is scored individually. It doesn't carry on. So in stroke play, you're adding up all your shots for the entire round, and at the end of the round, you've got your score. But in match play, it's how many strokes did you take to finish this particular hole versus your opponent on the same hole, and then that hole's over.
Oh.
So in match play, you play 18 holes, but basically it's who wins the most holes. And it doesn't matter how much you lose a hole by.
Interesting. I like that.
That's why as an amateur golfer, whenever I end up in like a group with a couple other players, whatever, and they're like, hey, you want to play competitively? I'm always like, sure, but it's got to be match play. And usually they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. I'm totally cool with that too. Because first of all, it means you don't have to continuously keep your entire score going on.
Right.
And secondly, when you do screw up, it doesn't really matter. You can completely screw up a hole, but it's just you lost that hole. It doesn't matter how many strokes you lost it by. The other guy could hit a hole in one, and you could hit like a 16, and it's like, okay, so you won that hole. And then you go on the next hole, and it's a say a par four, and you birdie it in three strokes, and he gets par, and you're like, well, I won that hole, so now we're even.
Oh.
Right? So that's the difference. And most golfers, most amateur golfers, someone like me who's looking to get better at golf, constantly trying to improve his game. I'm at the what's considered a bogey golfer now. So I average 18 over par after a round. Mm-hmm. That usually happens not because 18 over par is, you know, 18 strokes over 18 holes. It's not one stroke per hole. That's not why I'm an 18 over par player. That isn't what makes you a bogey golfer. What makes me a bogey golfer is that some holes I birdie, quite a few holes I par, but every now and then, every round, I'll have a hole that I like triple bogey, a couple double bogeys.
Right.
And that's what adds up to 18. But in match play, if it's only four holes that causes me to have a bad round overall, that's just four holes I lose to my opponent, but then I may win the holes that I par and I may win the holes that I birdie. So I just look at it as if I can do better than you for more than half the course, I beat you.
Which is, yeah, statistically, it's true. You have to win the first, how many, like at least nine.
But I mean, really, it's not even like that. If you don't win, you tie holes, that no one wins it.
Right, right.
So quite often, the difference in match play is who just won more holes. A lot of holes are tied. Mm-hmm. In the end, it came down to, you know, golfer A won six holes and golfer B only won four and they tied the rest. So golfer A won by two additional holes. So I'll play practically anyone, any amateur, mm-hmm. really, when it comes to match play. You can't play a pro. It's going to destroy you. For an amateur, it's a blast. And then even for pros, it equalizes the field. You know, Dustin Johnson went in as the number one seed at the WGC Dell Technologies match play, and he didn't get out of the group stage. It's set up almost just like a World Cup.
Right.
Right? So you have four people per group. And it's even done the same way, whereas the top 16 groups are the top, you know, 16 players, right? At the top of each group. Mm-hmm. And then it's sort of done by ranking the rest of the way to figure out each group. So basically, Dustin Johnson, being the number one player in the world, had the easiest group.
But still didn't make it out.
But still didn't make it out of the group because it's match play. It's not stroke play. It's not about how consistent you are the whole time. It's about, can you win certain holes at certain times? And it also encourages players to make risky shots they would never make in a normal tournament.
Of course.
If you're on a par five and the green is guarded by a pond, mm-hmm. on a regular day, you lay up all day. You're like, okay, so I hit my first shot. I'm going to lay up to a distance. And then I'm going to attack the green with my third shot. If I can one putt, I birdie it. If I two putt, I walk away with par and it's a day.
Right.
In match play, it's, you know, my opponent's ahead of me. He's got the honors. He hits a good drive. Now it's me. I hit a good drive. He's still a little bit ahead of me. So I got to go first.
Yeah.
You know what? To hell with it. Pull the fairway wood from my bag, and I'm going to try and hit a 250-yard approach into the green. If I get there, then he basically has to try to achieve the same or hope I'm going to screw up with my putting. Mm-hmm. Right? So you make a shot you would normally never make. You go for it. Now, if you grew up, you end up in the water. You're like, okay, now he has the advantage. But the thing is, you get those choices. Mm-hmm. And the opposite is let's say your opponent is the one who's further away. He's got next honors. He looks at it and goes, I'm not going to hit a 250-yard shot into the green. That's ridiculous. I'm going to lay up. But then you're like, oh, he laid up. And I got 240 into the green. If I hit the green, I got him.
Yes.
So they have to make those choices. And you never see those kind of plays
outside of
on a regular event, except for the final day sometimes. Mm-hmm. And the final round, a guy might look at it like, oh shit, I'm two strokes down. I've only got two holes left to play. If I really want to try and win this, hit that Hail Mary shot and hope maybe I can catch up before the final hole. So that's the only time it happens. But in match play, it happens all the time. And especially from the guys who are normally not ranked as high as, you know, their opponents. Because they're like, you know, you beat me week in, week out. But this week, it's just you versus me on these particular holes, and I'm going to take it to you. You're going to have to do shit you don't like to do to beat me. And that's why you see guys like Kuchar, Kevin Kisner, Ian Poulter, and those kind of guys always making the final rounds, whatever, of match play events, because they're so good at taking those risky plays and making them work. For more golf-related news and advice, check out Cobe Life on YouTube or check out Cobe Life Golf on Facebook or Instagram. Those are my other channels that are purely dedicated to golf. And for the full Hannah Bowen interview, as well as great fantasy sports advice and betting advice, sign up to be a patron on the Pro Sports Podcasters Patreon site. Right now, for a limited time, there's the franchise level that gets you absolutely everything at a significant discount. Be one of the first to support the Pro Sports Podcasters. See you next time.